After running through the glass of my second story window, in my sleep no less, I can't put it off any longer. It's been 26 years, but I have to remember what keeps me up nights.
Any chance you know someone by the name of Jesse Nicola?
Don't matter your saint, a lover or a liar.
Son, why go looking for something you don't want to find?
Your city burning up in the fire.
Supposedly it's some sort of dark being that roams the woods. You could be depressed, angry, frustrated, or whatever.
You don't know about old Shelly.
It can slip inside you and swallow your soul.
Like thought I told you. It's none your damn business.
All the rivers run to the sea, but the sea is not free.
It's always been that way, son.
You could have gotten yourself killed. Worse, Peters, Pops.
You ever hear a natural?
How can something like that be completely forgotten? Erased, like it never even existed.
You're listening to The Preacher, The Fisherman, and The Cahaba, a dramatic, audio-based interpretation of the novel by the same title, anticipated for release in October of 2020. This tale, recounted from my hospital bed, is told in order. So if you're joining us in the middle, it may be best to start at the beginning. We'll be here when you get back. But to be fair, you may want to hurry, because like the innocence of youth, you won't like it.
I'm not sure why, but I wasn't born with an appetite for drugs or drinking. None of my own doing, really. I just never had a desire for them. I thank the Lord for that, earnestly. Granted, He served me up a generous helping of difficult personality traits, and more than my fair share of stubbornness instead, but at least I'd rather drink sweet tea than just about anything else, and the only powder I was ever addicted to was a Fun Dip. So, sometimes, it was hard for me to see or understand what was unfolding all around me. I guess I was naive, bordering on oblivious for most of my childhood. I wouldn't change it, because that sheltered life in the deep hollow got me all the way through my freshman year before I had to start dealing with the rest of my life. Not a bad run, but like all good things.
Chapter 13, Nothing Good After Midnight. The old dairy set about a mile downstream from my house, in the opposite direction of the bridge, and right above a stretch of Cahaba that has never set well with me. So I was relieved to squeeze beneath the rusty barbed wire of an unkempt fence and into the pasture just before the dark night slithered in over the creek. I followed the well-worn earth of an old cow trail as it snaked its way through the lush winter rye towards an ancient silo atop the hill. The woody crown of a tree, having grown from deep within the bowels of the round brick structure, peeked out above the topless roof to look down over its decaying walls, slowly being strangled by thick vines of poison ivy. By the time I arrived, a group of five guys were already busy sketching out the primitive makings of a campsite. Lee's VW bus was parked precariously in the middle of the field, with the rest parked up near the road. Lee popped the top of a cold beer as I approached. He wiped the moisture from his hand onto a pant leg and reached out with a handshake. "Just in time. We're about to head down to the creek," he said. I looked around, studying all the new faces. "No Jay?" Lee shook his head. "If you don't show up, tomorrow morning we're going to have to hunt him down." I nodded. "Hey," said one of the boys, standing from his hands and knees where he had been stoking the infant flame. "Lee says you know these woods better than anyone around." "I don't know about that. But what's up?" "You know about that old cemetery back there?" "Yeah. Why?" "Thought we might go check it out tonight." "Nah, it's all grown up. And honestly, it's too dark out. It'd be dangerous." "Sounds like someone's scared." I didn't know him, so my muscles tensed in reaction. By the way, I'm Daniel. This is my grandpa's farm, he said, reaching out a hand to shake. He said that's an old Confederate graveyard, right? I've heard that too, I said, nodding. But it's hard to tell. The headstones are so worn. Grandpa says that sometimes, on dark nights, you can see them wandering the woods and the pasture, maybe going to battle or coming home, Daniel said. That's why that street there, he said, pointing behind us, is called Memory Lane. Yeah, well, when you have frequent parasomnias as I did, you try not to tempt the fates by indulging in ghost stories. But there was something distinctively unsettling about that place. I stared down the pasture towards the flowing waters and across to the far bank where large stone outcroppings formed a small labyrinth at the base of a rocky hill. On top, about 50 feet back into the woods, were a handful of gray headstones. The forest had reclaimed the patch decades, if not a century ago, leaving only the remnants of a low-filled stone wall just barely recognizable around its perimeter. And disconcertingly, the ominous snag of an old sweet gum tree stood right in front of one particular headstone, as if sprouted from the chest of the deceased. The inscription was too well-worn to read, but the old-timer said when they were kids, you could still make out everything but the name, and it read, 12 Alabama Cavalry, Confederate States Army, February 1848 to September 1863. I'd thought about that headstone a lot. Those dates would have made him my age when he went to war and presumably died on the field of battle. Maybe Chickamauga? The bodies of the fallen rarely made it home for burial, and the circumstances around this young soldier had long ago been forgotten, just like his name. No, I didn't like that place. Not in the least.
No worries. Just point us in the right direction then. We'll go check it out alone, Daniel said as he banged a flashlight against the palm of his hand with a thud. It flickered to life.
The sun had crept well below the tree-topped hills and the evening chill of fall began settling in around us as I shook my head in silent warning. He shoved my shoulder.
Come on, man. Don't be scared.
I tensed my fist as Lee put an arm in between us.
I'll tell you what, Lee said. We've got a good rain a few days back. What if instead of looking for some old dead folks, we hunt for some shrooms?
Daniel stepped away from us laughing as Lee looked into my eyes to calm me.
Okay,
Daniel said, nodding. Now someone's talking my language. Turning to leave, his flashlight led the way into the darkness of the field. Lee, the methodical person he was, gave one last direction to the rest before heading out.
Remember, they're brown on the tops, sort of whitish towards the edges, and only the ones growing in cow crap, nothing else, all right?
I took a seat by the fire as they scrambled off into the cool night, hunched over to investigate each patty they came upon. I had visions enough as it was, so my appetite for hallucinogenic shrooms was next to nil. I watched from a distance as one fellow continually found cow piles by accidentally stepping in them, but would then stop, mid-patty, to search carefully around his sneakers before moving on. I watched as another inspected an old pile, inching his face closer and closer for a potential shroom until his inebriated balance failed him and he tipped over, putting his hand directly into the dung.
"Found one!" a voice called out from the darkness. Daniel came running into the light of the campfire, clearly excited about his find.
Taking a victory lap, I suppose, he began running circles at breakneck speed around Lee's VW. About his third go-round, slightly impaired by a six-pack, he miscalculated the orbit and ran headlong into the side of the bus. It threw him backwards off his feet and onto his back, dazed and teetering on the brink of consciousness. I almost split aside laughing as he rocked back and forth, holding his head with one hand while hoisting a minuscule mushroom aloft with the other. Slowly, the rest of the boys began returning to camp, mostly defeated. Lee was the only one yet to return. An hour passed without any sign of him. Maybe more. I searched the black edges stretching out beyond the campfire towards the creek as I became concerned that, firstly, he was lost, and secondly, no one around that campfire was of sound mind to go look for him but me. So I reluctantly stood, dusted off my pants, and headed down the hill. Luckily, I didn't have to go far before I saw Lee emerging from the darkness, panting as he approached. I rushed down the hill to meet him, wrapping his arm over my shoulder to help him up the hill.
"What the hell happened?"
I asked. Ragged and out of breath, he lowered himself to sit beside the fire, staring into the blaze and breathing deeply.
"You're right. Something ain't right out there. What happened?"
"I heard something. I think."
"What?"
"Hell if I know. I found a bunch of shrooms down by that old barbed wire fence, so I took them down to the creek to wash them off. I cleaned one up and gave it a try. That's when I heard something. All jumbled like. Hard to tell between the wind and the water, but I was sure I heard something."
He paused again, squinting in the faint light, searching out the darkness nervously.
"Heard what? Lee, what?"
"Someone crying for help."
I could tell by the strained expression on his face that he wasn't joking. "At first, I thought I was just hearing things. You know how the woods are at night, right? Or maybe it was the shroom. But it got clearer. Someone was crying for help. And splashing."
He searched into his pocket but found it empty. "So I slipped down towards the creek. There was nothing there. I was gonna just leave. But come on, what was I supposed to do? I couldn't leave someone there to drown," he said, reaching into the other pocket. But it was empty as well.
"Probably just the wind, dude," Daniel said.
"That's the thing, though. It was so clear in my head," Lee said, pointing down the hill. "And every time I'd catch up to the cries, they'd move upstream. I kept following them."
"How far?" I asked. "Bridge," he said, looking up to meet my eyes. Finally finding his cigarettes in his shirt pocket, he pulled them out. "I needed to calm my nerves, you know? So I sat on a rock there by the creek and lit up a cigarette. I blew a smoke ring out over the water."
His lips trembled. "And I swear, dude, it was like the creek swelled up and swallowed it. I don't know. Maybe it was a snapping turtle or something. I don't know. I got the hell out of there."
His nervous hands were still shaking as he gave two smacks of the cigarette box against his palm before pulling one out to place between his lips. He patted his empty pants pockets again, but had no better luck. He bent down near the fire, briefly studying his forearms in the orange light, scraped and bleeding from the briars and limbs of the creek bank, before picking up a flaming branch to light his cigarette. We all waited in silence as he took a protracted, jagged drag on his Marlboro.
"I swear," he said, "I heard something laughing from around the creek bend.
I sprinted damn near the whole way back. Felt like something was right behind me." Still shaking, he flipped the half-spent butt of his cigarette towards the fire and sighed deeply. Then looking towards Daniel, who was rubbing the goose egg on his forehead, he asked,
"You a'ight?"
"Yeah, I reckon he'll live," I replied, smiling. Daniel looked up, pulling the mushroom from his shirt pocket and smiling.
"We gonna eat this thing or what?"
"Let's see it," Lee said as he took the fungus from Daniel's hand. He carefully turned it over to inspect the gills by the firelight before pushing his fingernail into the stem. After studying it for a long moment, he tossed it out into the darkness.
"Hey,"
Daniel said.
"That one might kill you," Lee said.
"But if we ain't got shrooms, maybe there's something else in the bus for you fine young gentlemen." He stood on two shaking legs, slowly regaining his composure as he scooted over to the VW and disappeared inside. Soon, he was sitting in the driver's seat with the engine on, feverishly cranking down the window. Smiling, he flung open the door and bounded out with one hand behind his back, the distinctive intro to Lynyrd Skynyrd's Simple Man blaring out into the fire-lit pasture from his 8-track player. The other boys cheered as Lee, walking back towards the fire, pulled a glass bong from behind his back and hoisted it in the air like some sort of championship trophy for stoners. I didn't know his new friends, but it was clear they were into things I wasn't. Lee's charisma and energy made him a natural leader, but this was one place I wouldn't follow him. And in all fairness, he never once pushed me to. I moved away from the circle to sit cross-legged on the ground, leaning back on my palms while the others huddled in closely.
I was exhausted. Sitting quietly in the darkness, my eyes grew heavy and my breathing lengthened until it was hard to resist the urge to doze.
So I lay down, planting an elbow on the ground to prop up my heavy head. The world felt different from this low angle, as I looked around the campfire through the bouncing of my weary lids, watching the boys load and pass the bong around. The scene was growing progressively hazier, and I was finding it near impossible to discern the campfire smoke from that of the bong. So when I noticed something unusual in the shadows, I questioned it at first. I squinted, training my eyes on the hazy outline of a figure hovering uncomfortably close to Daniel's head as he took the bong. As it gurgled beneath Daniel's deep inhalation, the shadow pulled in close, just above his shoulders. When he opened his mouth in an exaggerated O to exhale, the shadowy figure quickly moved in to pull the escaping smoke in through its nostrils. I rose up on my forearm, dumbstruck, as the figure pulled a small purple bag up to its chin, the kind a bottle of whiskey might be sold in, loosened the golden strings, and pressed the opening against its mouth. It then exhaled deeply, shaking with an almost tremulous ecstasy, before pulling the strings tight again. Quickly, I counted the boys around the fire. They were all accounted for. The shadowy visitor was new. The stranger progressed down the row, patiently awaiting each pass of the bong. No one seemed troubled in the least as it filled its lungs, then the bag with their secondhand smoke. They acted as if it wasn't even there, to the point where I questioned if it actually was. I rubbed my tired eyes, trying to ascertain if I was sleeping, waking, or somewhere in between again. Or maybe I'd caught an inadvertent contact buzz? I staggered to my feet as the bong moved towards Lee and the figure followed. "Lee, stop!" I shouted across the campfire.
"Huh?"
he said, raising his head.
"Behind you!" I said as I leapt over the fire and ran towards the figure, my heart pounding out of my chest.
Daniel sprung to his feet, turning in circles. Lee put a hand on my shoulder, but I swatted it away as I anxiously searched the shadows.
"Calm down, dude. You're having one of those things," he said.
My chest heaved as my lungs worked overtime.
"Nah, man, nah. I saw it."
"It's okay. Calm down."
Staggering backwards with a hand behind me, I eased myself back against a nearby tree and slid down to the ground, gasping for breath. Looking across the fire, I could see the boys shaking their heads.
"All right," Lee said. "That's enough for tonight. We should get some shut-eye."
The others, probably frustrated that I'd ruined their mellow moods, dispersed to their respective sleeping bags, and Lee stepped into the bus, sliding the door behind him. The adrenaline slowly subsided as my breathing regulated and my parasomnic emotions ebbed, but I couldn't get back to sleep. I looked out over the still campsite. I didn't feel unique like I did when I was younger. I just felt different. A half hour or so later, the door of the bus slid open again and Lee stepped down. Seeing I was still awake, he said,
"Need to take a whiz."
"Come on, man. At least go behind a tree."
"Sorry, my friend. When in doubt, whip it out," he said as he turned his back to me and began to relieve himself at the edge of the smoldering fire.
Then, zipping up and turning back towards the bus, something caught his attention in the distance. Like a hawk on a limb, his entire body tensed.
"What?"
I asked. He didn't respond.
"Lee, what is it?"
"You're right.
I see him,"
he said before taking off in a dead sprint through the pasture towards the road. Instinctively, I sprinted after him. The rest of the group, either too tired to move or too stoned to care, didn't so much as roll over. Lee was incredibly fast and had already made it to the barn lot before I caught up. As I arrived, panting, Lee was clenching his fist tightly, marching towards the mayor, now easily recognizable in the flickering barn floodlight.
"What the hell's your problem, old man?" Lee shouted.
"I ain't got no problem, boy. Do you?"
The mayor responded calmly in a deep, grovelly mumble.
"Why you out this time of night?"
"I swear, old man, I'll clock you,"
Lee said as he grabbed the mayor's shirt and twisted his grip to tighten it.
"Ain't nobody clocks Luke. Nobody."
The mayor shouted as he reached under Lee's arms, grabbed his shirt at the chest, and lifted him off the ground. Startled by his strength, Lee turned loose and tumbled back. The mayor peered down as he stepped over him to continue along the road to town.
"Stay out of that creek, boy,"
he mumbled as he passed me. I helped Lee up as we watched the mayor disappear into the darkness. "You okay?" I asked. Lee nodded as he rubbed his hands together to dust them off.
"What the hell are you doing, dude?" I said.
"Me? You saw him.
He's screwing with us, man. If we don't do something about it, you think beating him up is going to solve this?"
To hell with you, man. You said it yourself. He might have killed Jesse. What am I supposed to do? Thank him?
You know what? You're messed up right now. You just need to go to bed. All this drinking and the stinking drugs, you aren't yourself anymore, I said, pushing his shoulder.
Screw you, dude,
he said, shoving me back with two hands. Your high and mighty crap don't make you right.
High and mighty? Me?
Those drugs are screwing with your head.
Screwing with my head?
Come on, you're the most screwed up guy I know. Wandering around the woods in your sleep. Who the hell are you to judge anybody? He waved the back of his hand up.
Know what? Maybe you shouldn't come to these campouts anymore.
He walked past me, bumping my shoulder angrily as he went. I followed him back towards camp in silence.
You guys okay?
Daniel asked, finally having stirred from the commotion.
We're fine, Lee said.
Daniel took the hint and left it alone.
I'll stay up in case he comes back. You get some sleep, Lee said to me, forcing some civility. Take the back seat.
All right, I'll try. Besides, nothing good ever happens after midnight anyways, right?
Sure don't look like it.
Physically and emotionally spent, I climbed into the back seat of his bus, looking out the window in the direction of the creek and the cemetery beyond it. As the sounds of the night filled my mind, I said a small prayer and finally let exhaustion overtake me. There's a bomb coming out of the sky. Chapter 14, A Big Empty Hole. When I woke in the morning, Lee was standing by the remains of last night's fire, smoking a cigarette and looking out towards the woods.
Hey, man,
he said as I stepped out of the bus. He flipped his spent butt into the pasture.
I was thinking you would have walked home already.
Nah, I actually slept good for once, I think. Just wasn't long enough.
I hear you. Want to ride home?
Yeah. That'd be good. We hopped back into the bus and we pulled away without waking the others. We bounced along the short drive to my house in silence, except for the low sound of Hank Williams Jr. playing softly on the 8-track. When we reached my driveway, Lee turned off the bus and stepped out to take a quick stretch before continuing home. The sun, now cresting the mountain behind us, broke against the tall pines to cast long, shadowy streaks across the lawn. We leaned back against the bus while the morning slid gently into our little corner of earth.
Man, you really ought to see a doctor about your sleep, Lee said, breaking the silence.
I know. I said, shaking my head and shrugging.
I'm afraid you're going to hurt yourself. Walk off a cliff, or have a heart attack, or something.
I know. It's kind of crazy, man, I replied. And it's getting worse, ever since Jesse.
You know, I kind of get it. How you must feel, I mean, Lee said, looking down. It probably ain't exactly the same, but a bad trip, like the one I must have had last night.
You mean the voice?
Yeah. I mean, sorta. It wasn't just hearing the screams or the laughing. It was like, well, like this uneasy feeling I can't seem to shake. Like I wasn't supposed to be there. Like I didn't belong.
He shook his head and scowled. Lee, I'm sorry about what I said last night.
You know, nah, it ain't a thing, man.
Suddenly, a silver car slammed on its brakes and came to a skidding stop on the road below us.
What the hell, Lee said, cocking his head.
The car executed a clumsy 3-point turn in the middle of a 50-mile-per-hour 2-lane road and then laid on the horn as it headed up the driveway.
Is that Jay's dad?
Lee said.
Looks like it, but
I responded. The car bounded through the potholes of my driveway, throwing sparks as its undercarriage scraped the asphalt before coming to a stop beside us. The door swung open and out bounded Jay.
I had to hand it to him. He was bold.
Bold to the point of dangerous, still a year away from getting his driver's license.
Yo!
He shouted as he stood in the open door of the car, resting his arms on the roof.
Quiet, man. My folks are asleep, I said sharply. Where have you been? We thought the mayor got you, Lee said.
What? Why?
Because you didn't come to school this week, I said.
Oh, no. I've been hanging out at a friend's house. I needed a break. And what about last night? You were supposed to meet us at the campout, Lee said.
Oh, yeah, sorry about that. I'm just getting back from Chinkapin Mountain, he replied.
Chinkapin Mountain? What in the world? I asked.
He hesitated momentarily, but he was born an open book, and without the heavy cover of discretion, the pages were often blowing in the wind.
Last time I saw Jesse, he told me they were keeping their stuff in a cabin up there, so I was checking it out.
Stuff? Lee asked.
Yeah, powder.
So I went up there to find it, he said.
Dude, that's dumb. You got no idea the kind of folks you're messing.
Sure I do.
It's Frederick, Jay said.
What? Are you out of your godforsaken mind? Do you have some sort of death wish?
Nah, man, Jay said, dismissing Lee with a wave of his hand. I went up there in the middle of the night.
He kicked at the mat of pine straw on the blacktop.
Don't matter anyhow. I couldn't find it. Supposedly it's up on the mountain by some lake in the middle of the woods. But there's no road in, and it's a damn jungle up there, you know.
On top of the mountain, there's no lake up there, I said.
Well, that's what Jesse said, dude.
How would Jesse know?
I don't know.
Oh, no, I said, looking at Lee. You think that's what he stole from Frederick?
Maybe. One thing's sure, you don't want to mess with those guys, Lee said.
Crap, Jay said, looking down at his wristwatch. I'd better get this car home before Dad wakes up.
Summoning another one of his deep Viking laughs, he jumped in the driver's seat, slammed the door behind him, and sped out the other side of the Circle Drive, leaving me and Lee shaking our heads.
Powder? I asked.
Cocaine. Nasty stuff. The kind of stuff that'll get its hooks in you, steal your damn soul, and leave a big, empty hole running right through the middle.
So Jesse was... Lee shrugged, palms turned out.
Maybe. Seems like it's getting its hooks into a lot of folks around here.
But Jesse? Again he shrugged.
Anyways, I reckon I best be getting home too, he said.
Yeah, I said. What are you getting into tonight?
Ah, he stalled. I'm not real sure. Probably nothing. I'm pretty tired. I may just hang close to the house.
Lee didn't get tired, as far as I had ever seen, and he certainly didn't hang out at home on a Saturday night.
All right, then. I guess I'll see you around, I said, shrugging.
Yeah, sure. I'll swing by next week, Lee said as he waved goodbye and stepped back into the bus.
I backed away to take a seat on the low rock wall as he climbed atop the driver's seat to the squeal of stiff old springs. He bent over to look out through the open passenger window.
I think it's a home game this coming Friday, if you want to go.
I nodded silently and looked away towards the yard as he turned the key. Without a word, I stood and moved to the back of the bus. I leaned my shoulder into the trunk and pushed him down the hill until gravity took over. I extended my arms and, with one last mighty push, shoved him away. He popped the clutch, the engine hummed to life, and he rolled down the driveway.
Don't matter your saying, a lover or a liar. When you're watching your city burning up in the fire, faces flashing in the night, who could that be? Voices churning in my head like a holy choir. There's a bomb coming out of the sky, and everybody knows.
Chapter 15. Old Shelly Coat.
Billy! Aunt Mary called out from the bottom of the hill, raising a hand in the air.
Looking across the clearing towards the front porch, I could see Linda waving. I waved back, acknowledging the responsibility, and headed down the hill to meet Aunt Mary.
You're up and at 'em early, darling, she said.
Yes, ma'am. Just back from a camp out with some buddies.
I see. How are things in your world?
Good, I said, rubbing the back of my neck.
Well, good, good. Seems like I hadn't seen you in ages. Tell me, how was the camp out?
We continued down the fence row, her hands clasped behind her back as we walked. The blotchy age spots sprinkled across her cheeks glowed in the morning sun like a watercolor painting as she smiled at me. Ever since I was a child, that look would somehow lower my guard, pry open my chest, and spill my guts out. Couple that with the knowledge that she'd not remember a word by the time we made it back to her house, and the conditions were ripe for candor. Strangest thing happened. Out by the creek? Down by the old dairy? Almost to the interstate? Yes, ma'am. Sure, I know the one. Well, my friend Lee? The wild one. Yes, ma'am. He was down by the creek after dark and heard a voice calling out for help. She stopped walking and turned an attentive ear towards me as I continued, like someone was drowning. But when he looked, nobody? I nodded, my eyes narrowing. She said, smiling. I've heard this one before. Really? Oh, Lordy, yes. My father hunted every inch of these hills. He must have walked a million miles along the Cahaba. And he saw a lot, she said, looking at me over the top rim of her glasses. Well, one night, he and Grandpa were setting traps down on the creek when they heard something. It was quiet at first, so they couldn't quite make it out. They thought maybe it was the wind, but it kept getting louder and clearer as they headed upstream. She paused to look out over the fence into the pecan orchard. The flow of clear memory greeted her clouded mind like an old friend, giving energy to her words as she continued. They heard someone yelling for help and splashing. They ran along the bank, struggling through the underbrush, until they reached that old flat rock by the swimming hole. You know the one. Yes, ma'am, I think so, I said, my brow beginning to bead. Grandpa waded out into the water, but there was nothing there. And as he stood in the water up to his waist, they heard the voice again, coming from just upstream. Help me! Please, help me! Aunt Mary, I started to interject, but she lifted two fingers towards me. It went on like that through most of the night, chasing the voice upstream, bend by bend, the dogs baying, until they reached the wetlands at the head of the creek. And there they were, standing ankle deep in the soggy bottom, when they heard the voice one last time. Laughing. I froze, falling several steps behind as she started back down the road. What do you think it? Well, one never knows for sure, not with this sort of thing. This was a wild place back then. Mountain lions and bears still walked these woods. Could have been anything, I guess. But Granddaddy said it was old Shellycoat. She read the confusion written into my crinkled forehead. You don't know about old Shellycoat? I shook my head. I see. Well, he's just a boogeyman from the old country. They say he haunts waters, rivers, and creeks. But enough of that foolishness. It's just an old story. No, please, tell me. Well, all right then, she smiled. Some say he's just a prankster, playing tricks on folks who get too near his river. But you know how it is, Billy. Sometimes tricks get out of hand. I looked away across the pecan orchard. Reading the flushness of my face, Aunt Mary grabbed my hand and wrapped it in the fold of her arm, pulling me along down the lane. As the story goes, you could hear him coming because he wore a coat made from shells that would clatter and clink when he moved. With those shells, he could do nearly anything. But without them, he was powerless. So, when he wasn't wearing them, he'd hide them for safekeeping beneath a giant boulder. She grinned, patted me on the back, and then started into a melody. Shellycoat, gang all hang. I cry not your mercy, I fear not your name. She smiled as she remembered. A girlfriend of mine, when I was about your age, said that if you went out to that old flat rock and said those words, he'd show himself. That's nonsense, right? I said, surprised that such a silly question came from my own mouth. I looked away, embarrassed. Well, I guess, darling, but it all depends on, well, one thing's sure. You'll never catch me singing that tune by that old flat rock. No, sirree, she said. Listen, Billy, life's a complicated thing, and Shiloh's Butte is a complicated place. It always has been. These old stories followed the Scotch-Irish fur traders up the Cahaba from the Alabama, where they got all tangled up with the Indian stories, and maybe some African, too. You can't take these old tales literally, but they also don't come from naught. Like always, the truth's somewhere in between. I rubbed the back of my neck in frustration.
Could he drown someone? I asked.
She stepped backwards as a concerned look washed over her face.
Oh, my. I don't think so. It's just an old wives' tale, Billy.
Aunt Mary, I said, shaking. Jesse drowned. That's why I... She gasped again, as if it were the first time she had heard it. And in her mind, I'm sure it was. Then, leaning in, she wrapped her long, strong arms around me and patted the back of my head. My eyes began to blur as she squeezed me. Then she placed her hands on the outside of my shoulders and pushed me back to arm's length, looking compassionately through the thick lenses of her eyeglasses.
Are you all right? She said.
I don't know. I just can't stop thinking about it.
Did you tell the police?
I didn't have to. They found his body. I paused to clear the lump in my throat.
They think he did it himself.
She looked at me and made a low, through her closed mouth.
I see. And you don't?
No, ma'am.
She said again as she bent over to pick up two stray pecans from the blacktop, then placing one in her palm and wrapping her slender, arthritic fingers around the second, she squeezed them together to break the shells. Picking away the cracked one, she dug out the nut and popped it in her mouth. Then, tossing the empty shell over the fence, she grabbed my hand and tucked it back into the bend of her arm to turn us towards her house. As we reached the pasture gate, she rested her hand atop the old cow skull.
Listen, darling, there are some dark places on that old river, but they're only as dark as you make them. You understand?
I stood for a moment in silence, swimming in the comforting pools of her familiar compassion, when the quiet was broken by a loud shout from the front porch of her little yellow house.
Mary!
The voice called out. We turned around to see Linda pointing towards her wristwatch. Pill time! I slipped my arms under hers for a long hug. Her closed mouth grin, lips stretched tight against her teeth, showed her concern.
Don't worry about me, Aunt Mary. I'll be fine, I promise, I said, knowing full well she'd not remember this conversation tomorrow.
As she turned to leave, I looked out across the pasture, where Uncle John stood silhouetted against the glowing pond, his fishing pole bowed over. The tip bobbed up and down erratically to the pulsating thrill of the morning's first bite. I unlatched the gate and slid through to the blinding welcome of the eastern horizon as it focused a new day's energy on my face, rejuvenating my lethargic body.